committee for the opportunity. As the chair said, my name is Martin van Staden. I am the legal researcher for the Free Market Foundation, and in particular I am here on behalf of the Rule of Law Project of the Free Market Foundation. Our concern with the proposed bill is one of unintended consequences and not the intentions or how the bill is written, which is usually our concern, but not this time. The bill itself is attempting to realize the constitutional principles of open and constitutional governance and transparency. These are obviously values found in Section 1D of our Constitution, which our Rule of Law Project is very much all about. The bill itself is well written, and in general, but not absolutely, its contents are unobjectionable. The Free Market Foundation has a 43-year history of fighting for an open society founded on the rule of law and good governance. We were founded in 1975 in the height of apartheid, and we've been fighting against injustice ever since. In particular, that's relevant today for the bill is our public participation project, which emphasizes that the public should get involved in in the lawmaking process, and our socioeconomic impact assessment project, which is also about giving the public information about interventions proposed by government, especially in the economy.
I'm sorry, sir. Is the presentation in the back? Yeah. Is it here? Is it here?
Yeah, it is in the back. Okay, now you can proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it goes without saying that we support in principle the underlying objective of the bill. The public should have, and indeed does have, a right to know who funds political parties. Political parties are not simply private associations, as many argue. They are organizations with the stated intention of governing over a significant part of or the whole of our society. Political parties do, therefore, occupy an interesting space straddling the so-called public-private divide in society. But because they propose to rule over us, make law for us, and take our tax money, there is a clear need for us to know who our political parties are serving, us or some foreign interests, us or some ideological interests, us or themselves. So transparency in party funding is therefore one of the ways to shed light on this. So I hope it is clear to the members of this committee that the Free Market Foundation is not against the bill per se as it stands. Our concern instead is with the legislative and regulatory environment in which this bill is being implemented, will be implemented. And in this respect, we much urge Parliament, and especially this committee, to observe caution in whether or not to adopt and pass the bill right now, as opposed to somewhere down the line. We believe that certain things need to happen before the bill is passed. Otherwise, South Africa may venture down a path of unintended consequences that may decimate our democracy. So allow me to preface the concerns I will be highlighting with the following statement. The Free Market Foundation is and always has been a non-partisan member of our civil society. We support ideas, values, principles, and policies, not parties. And we oppose certain ideas and policies, not parties. Nothing I have to say here today should be construed as an attack on any particular political party. What I intend to do is problematize a system and a recurring phenomenon in lawmaking in South Africa and abroad. This phenomenon is not limited to the ruling party, and indeed has been exhibited by parties that have governed all and different parts of South Africa in the past and today. The phenomenon I am referring to is the excessive and often untethered discretionary powers that are bestowed by the national and provincial legislatures of our country on officials within the executive government. Section 1C of the Constitution provides that South Africa is founded upon the supremacy of the Constitution and the rule of law. This means that the Constitution itself does not stand alone as a component of our constitutional democracy. No, the Constitution says that it and the rule of law are supreme. These are the two peaks of constitutionalism in South Africa. But we do often forget about the rule of law as a constitutional imperative. We all say and believe we support this notion, but that is often only rhetorical. In practice, we have shown much contempt for the rule of law indeed. The rule of law, according to the late Justice Tolakele Madala, in the constitutional case of Van der Walt versus Metcash, amounts to, among other things, the absence of arbitrary power and excludes unreasonableness and unpredictability. A good way to think about the rule of law is that it means we are ruled by the law and not by the arbitrary whims of personalities. This means that at no point must the law be capable of being applied simply according to the discretion of an official. Some of you may recall that during apartheid, arbitrary discretion was infamously used for racial classification and other forms of state tyranny, when officials were simply empowered to conduct the so-called pencil test to determine who was of what race. Security laws empowered ministers to throw people in jail simply because they suspected them of being communist propagandists. The Constitution was intended to put a stop to this legal delinquency and committed South Africa explicitly to the rule of law. When South Africans go to the ballot box every 5 years, we elect Parliament, you in other words, not bureaucrats in our executive government. We ask that you, Parliament, the National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly, make the laws that will bind us in our day-to-day lives. We do not ask this of officials. Unfortunately, we continue to have legislation on the statute book from before and after apartheid fell that assigns unjustifiably wide discretionary powers on officials within the executive government. And this gives officials too great a power over things properly reserved for Parliament. In certain industries, companies, or people who are associated with those companies on a high level, like directors or senior managers, must maintain an impeccable personal and professional relationship with the regulators of their industries. Now, good personal relationships are obviously a good thing in our society, but not if they are manufactured simply to ensure that regulatory bullying does not occur, or intimidation. Whether or not someone is treated fairly by government should not depend on whether the officials in government actually takes a liking to those particular persons or companies. In light of the political party funding bill, this assignment of wide discretionary powers will create a problem, especially for the funding of political parties that are not in government. Many, if not most, of the people who are currently funding one of the opposition parties will not want their names to be made public. This is so because they will fear retaliation from their industry regulators. Even if the companies are not funding the opposition parties, directors and senior managers in their personal capacity will fear that their association with the company might cause a reaction from their regulators, which will be to the company's detriment. Imagine, if you will, that an explicitly anti-apartheid party was founded during the previous regime, and a bill like the political funding bill was enacted. Let's say that a director of a big company in the retail industry was funding this anti-apartheid political party. Now, because the director himself opposed apartheid, he funded this party. But the director of the company knows the company depends on a license to operate, for example, in a particular area. The national party regulator in his industry, he fears, will not allow him to renew his license or will impose some or other regulatory obligation on his company that it cannot comply with. He will thus stop funding the anti-apartheid party because obviously the national party regulator may try and score some points in this way. I make up this hypothetical scenario from the apartheid era simply for us to distance ourselves emotionally from the current parties in our parliament. As I said, this is a systemic problem that is evident elsewhere in the world, especially in the United States. It is only a bigger problem in South Africa because we have a far higher corruption perception ranking than, say, the United States, Botswana, or Japan. Last year, for example, South Africa scored 43 out of 100 in Transparency International's Corruption Perceptions Index. The US scored 75, Botswana 61, and Japan 73. The higher the number, the better. The lower the number, the worse the perception of corruption in society is. So we score quite below average there. You must understand that this is not to say that regulators will, in fact, take action against companies or people who fund opposition parties. I cannot know that they will, and I have no doubt that the vast majority of our civil service is of an impeccable moral character. This is simply about perceptions and fears, whether they are well-founded or not. We know that as a result of the assignment of wide discretionary powers, there will be sufficient fear amongst the funders of political parties that regulatory bullying will ensue if the funding is made public, and they will thus stop funding even before the bill is passed, likely. It is clear that government does not intend for regulatory bullying to happen. This is why in the beginning I said that our concerns relate to unintended consequences. The unintended consequence of this bill is that funding of opposition political parties by private persons will or may certainly decrease dramatically to avoid retaliation from industry regulators. Only if this problem is fixed will the fear by current and potential funders subside. The problem, of course, is the wide discretionary powers and legislative provisions that are assigning powers to officials. And we submit that it is a bad idea to pass the political party funding bill right now before these problems are rectified. Parliament can solve this problem by changing provisions in other legislation, not the political party funding bill, that assign wide discretionary powers, and rather include a list of criteria that regulators must adhere to in making their decisions rather than their own discretion. Some provisions say that a regulator must make a bill in the public interest. This is a very popular one. Or it says, like the new tobacco bill does, that the minister may make a decision simply if he or she is satisfied that it is the correct decision in the context. These kinds of provisions are problematic in a society apparently under the rule of law. The tobacco bill, which the Free Market Foundation opposes because of its content, can be saved from a rule of law perspective by simply removing the power of the minister to decide on a whim where to prohibit smoking. The bill is specific about where smoking is prohibited, so this extra power for the minister is simply unnecessary, but also very dangerous. And this is just one example of how Parliament can improve the regulatory and legislative environment to make passing a bill like the political party funding bill far more appropriate. I thank you for your time and would happily answer questions or receive your comments.
Oh, thank you. That's the presentation, honorable members. Honorable Kamini will be the first. Over to you, honorable Kamini.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. He's saying it was progressive, but he couldn't find where the presentation was on the document. Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Let me welcome the presentation and start off by saying I couldn't find it in the document. I might have missed. You'll pardon me if I ask things that you would have said. I couldn't follow you on the document. I tried my best to follow as you were presenting, but also maybe because he was too fast for me. I said he. I did. No, I have a gap. So,
protected,
he sounds like a she. Honourable Chair, he said in the presentation, I heard him saying that it will not be ideal for us to pass the bill now in this environment. Maybe at some stage later. So my question is, what will be, if you were to be given an opportunity to do that, what is the ideal time for you? When do you think will be the ideal time or conducive environment for Parliament to pass this bill? And the second matter, the presentation is more on opposition parties, people not being free, because they will be known that they're associated with this company. The company might be affected because of that. There will always be opposition parties. At what stage do you think that, if I heard you correct, there will be time where there are no opposition parties, then the bill can be passed. As said earlier, Chairperson, I might have missed some of the things. Oh, the last one, Chair. I found a contradiction on the presentation because on the example he made about corruption, where we are in terms of ranking as a country as compared to other countries, the contradiction I found is that this bill for me, one of the objectives is to ensure that there is transparency, which is a problem for him that we are ranking low currently as a country. But also, he's talking about corruption, but at the same time, for me, this bill is trying to deal with corruption. So I don't know. I found a contradiction there. Thank you, Chair. If I could be clarified.
No, thanks, Honourable Damien. Any other clarity-seeking question, honourable member? So it looks like there's only two issues raised by honourable Kamini. Over to you.
First of all, I apologise for speaking so quickly. This is my first time in Parliament, so I'm a bit new to this. But I would happily address your concerns. As to when, it's not a matter of when, but rather under what conditions. So I think that the bill should be passed when certain conditions have changed in South Africa. And that specifically, as I mentioned, is we need to really change how laws are currently being made. Currently, there's it seems like a culture, and it's not only limited to South Africa. The rest of the world has done this. That is completely contrary to the rule of law, where excessive discretion is granted to government and legislation rather than parliament itself saying what should happen. It gives a regulator the power to decide what should happen in specific instances. So the Free Market Foundation has done research on various pieces of legislation, and if I may, let me provide an example from the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006, which provides that no one may operate an electricity generation, transmission, or distribution facility, or import or export electricity, or be involved in the trading of electricity without a license issued by the regulator. And the regulator is not obliged to issue a license. The regulator may also make a license subject to any conditions and vary any conditions if it is necessary for the purposes of the act. This is an example of unfettered discretion in an act. So this regulator, whoever he or she may be, essentially has the power to legislate by decree, rule by diktat in his industry. So it's legislation like this, and specifically provisions like this in legislation all across the country, provincial legislatures, provincial legislation, bylaws in municipalities. It's found everywhere. This needs to change. There should be a wholesale legislative review, for example, like the high-level panel recently did. Look at what legislation we have. Recommend changes to fix those provisions, and then I would say would be an opportune time to bring in this law. So, for example, we see in the United States they have a law like this, and there we have people in companies, rich people, being very open about the political parties they support, and that's good. There's complete transparency in that regard, and I think we, South Africa, should get there eventually. But in the U.S., they don't have the perception that they will be bullied by their regulators. In South Africa, that is different. On your second question, on whether or not there will be opposition parties, I don't doubt that there will always be opposition parties, but our concern is that it will be significantly more difficult for opposition parties to mount an effective campaign under the conditions currently prevalent in South Africa if this bill is passed. So it will be very difficult for them to have funding, and in so doing they may lose significant resources and so forth, as opposed to the governing party. And again, this depends on where you are in South Africa. In the Western Cape, there's a different governing party. So, and then to your last point about the contradiction, yes, the bill's objective is to bring about transparency and is definitely aimed against corruption. And as I said at the beginning of the presentation, we are completely in principle behind the bill. It's definitely a worthy intervention. Our concern is simply that even though it's a bill of good intentions, there will be unintended consequences. So the bill itself is great from a rule of law perspective, with minor concerns that it's not that we're not going to get into now from the Free Market Foundation's perspective. But we're afraid of what's going to happen downstream, so to say, from the bill. So our concern is not with the bill, but rather what's going to happen around it. And we believe sincerely that it may lead to corruption being getting worse from a perception perspective. Not necessarily actually regulators bullying companies, but there is this perception amongst South Africans that the government is corrupt. The courts have said that this is trite in South Africa, and that is our concern. There's a perception, and because of that perception, the funding of opposition parties may dry out. I really hope that answers your question.
No, thank you. So there are the two ends. The end of, I've noted, Honorable Mutashupi, the Honorable Mutha.
Thank you, Chairperson. The perception in South Africa is that there are, of course, individuals that are corrupt and not the government. It's a generally accepted perception in South Africa, not government as such. The other issue is that in South Africa, equally, when elections are conducted, I don't want you to respond. It's public knowledge. When elections are conducted in South Africa, are conducted on an equal basis with the same market, which means same constituency where we go and lobby for votes. And there is no ruling party, there is no opposition, there is nothing. the all political parties that exist, the playing field is level for them to go and lobby, and the results will then determine who becomes the ruling party and who becomes the opposition at that point. That is why you hear Honorable Del Labuskagne every time preaching, we are going to be the new government. She knows that we are starting on an equal basis. We are not advantaged already when we start
the
Chair,
on a point of order, we're not busy with the political debate.
No, it's not a political debate. What I'm trying to say is that we are not starting elections on an unequal basis. We are starting equally, at zero, all of us. That must be understood. Thank you.
Thanks. I think this is just a general comment. It's not a clarity seeking point. So we'll not respond to it. Yeah. Honorable Nita.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, in his presentation, he mentioned that there are some countries who are having counterbalance maybe systems. And as South Africa, as you have alluded to, the fact that it's perceived there some individuals to be corrupt. But what I want to know from him, in terms of what the issue of counterbalance, when do you think we can be ready in South Africa in terms of those systems in place? Because it looks like, in your view, we cannot proceed with the bill unless we deal with the particular issue. So I just want to be clarified on that matter. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Nita. What do you, Mr. Van Staden?
Well, a good way, I guess, to say when the right time would be is when we actually climb the ladder in Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index. So currently, like I said, we scored 43 out of 100. The higher the number, the better. So we're currently under half. And so if the perception of corruption in South Africa significantly declines, I would say perhaps getting to the 70s, around there. That would probably be a good, more appropriate time, although 100 would probably be the best.
Thank you. I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. I think the issues were fairly covered. Would like to thank you for coming through, availing yourself.
Thank you, Chair.
To make such a presentation. You are now released. Our next presentation will be done from Right to Know. It will be done by Mr. Murray Hunter. Over to you, Mr. Hunter. I can sit somewhere here in front. We want to be able to see you very closely when you are making your presentation. Over to you, sir. You can proceed.
I speak to you today.
Thank you very much, Chair, and just thank you to all of the honourable members. My name is, as the Chair said, my name is Murray Hunter. I'm a researcher and an organiser with the Right to Know campaign. My colleague who actually drafted the drafted the submission, Muleki Morongo, couldn't join us here today, so I'm here before you. I think we firstly want to note, I'm assuming that the background to the Right to Know campaign is noted in the beginning of our submission, so if there are any questions, I can address them afterwards. But I think we want to note firstly just our thanks to the NCOP and to your colleagues in the National Assembly for the work that has been done in the last year to actually produce the bill as it is now. I think that we really are in a different place and with new prospects for democracy that we didn't have before those steps were taken. So this is a really positive development. The Right to Know, as the name would suggest, is obviously an organization that is fervent in the belief that the people of South Africa do have a right to know who is funding their political parties, that there needs to be a great deal of transparency over the funding of our politics and the makeup of our political ecosystem. So clearly the moves that have been made in the bill are a good thing. We would align ourselves very closely with the submission that was made by My Vote Counts, and they had a number of detailed proposals that I won't go into, but our submission really stresses five key points. I think the first key point that I'd like to point out is the need for the disclosures, the threshold for disclosures to be raised from the 100,000 rand. This is something that has been touched on by a number of different submissions, but I think it's worth going over. If we're all here agreeing that the public has a right to know who is funding political parties, that there is a need for transparency, it is not clear why the threshold for 100,000 rand has been chosen. Unfortunately, we've made some attempts to find out some basic information about what the picture looks like for political parties, about what sort of donations they're receiving. So we don't have a good sense at this moment of what proportion of donations to political parties would fall above or below that threshold. But I anticipate, our assumption is that a great many donations would be excluded at 100,000 Rand. We're talking about quite a high number. In our submission, we had suggested that given the extreme inequality and the pervasive poverty in our society, where 100,000 Rand is so far beyond what an ordinary citizen could ever hope to donate to a political party, that we should reduce that, and it should in some way be linked to the average household income or something like that. The suggestion that has been made by My Vote Counts of the 10,000 Rand cap, we could go with that. We weren't meaning to be prescriptive to the committee. I think it is very difficult to identify a marker that isn't arbitrary without some kind of provision of information from political parties about what the situation is currently. So it is very difficult to regulate in that lack of transparency, but we think that a 10,000 Rand cap as opposed to a 100,000 Rand cap is something that we could get behind. So that was the first point, was lowering the threshold. I think the second point, and this is also something that's been touched on by several submissions, is the need to give much better clarity about what public disclosure will actually mean. We've seen a lack of clarity in the provisions about where, to whom the Commission will be disclosing this information. Will it be to Parliament? Will it be to the National Assembly? Or will it be to the public? For us, we think as public as that information can be, there should be a proactive disclosure. It should be on a website. You should be able to download it in an open format so that members of the public, so that voters can look at it, so that researchers can look at it, journalists, and of course, members of political parties can also look at that information. So we want to see a very open disclosure, and I think that needs to be clarified in the legislation. That was the second point, is ensuring full disclosure. A third point which we've raised in our submission is that there needs to be some prohibition on political party donors doing business with the state. This is the biggest pattern we've seen for corruption in party politics. From the information that is publicly available, as I said, in the lack of transparency, it's difficult to always draw these conclusions. But the biggest avenue for corruption in South Africa, in the way that we've seen in other democracies as well, is this pay-to-play. You give a donation, you get a tender. You give a donation, you get some kind of favor. And the only way that we feel this can be dealt with is by putting a clear prohibition on donors that you're not going to get business for it. And if those who are doing business with the state who still want to contribute towards the functioning of political parties, which is a very good imperative, can do so through a multi-party democracy fund. So that cap is necessary, and we've also suggested that be expanded to include investment vehicles as well, parties' investment vehicles. We would like to see assurances that these investment vehicles won't be given some kind of equity in deals and those sorts of things. The fourth point we wanted to stress was the need for the public funding mix to be given a greater emphasis on political diversity. So rather than the 90-10 mechanism that we've seen in the past, we think something like a 50-50 would be good. So there's some proportionality, but also a sharing of those public funds to ensure that smaller parties, that political diversity is possible and is encouraged through the funding. And again, we haven't been prescriptive in our suggestions. We've just said we think that the legislation should lean in a different direction. And then the final point, and I think this is touching on something I've said already, is the need for some kind of historical transparency. Because we have a current situation where, let's assume that the bill is passed in the lead up to the 2019 elections, that it's implemented in the lead up to the 2019 elections, I think that would be a very positive thing. But it is very concerning that the historical record will never be corrected, that there won't be information about what our situation has been since the dawn of democracy in terms of political party finances, which is really a necessary provision for research, for historians, for political analysts, for journalists, for members of the public to actually understand what does income look like for political parties. And going forward, once we've implemented this regulation, will we see a change in that income? Have these regulations had a positive or negative effect? That information can't be deduced without some kind of disclosure from parties about what their financial records have looked like up until now. And you can do so without actually disclosing donors, but simply disclosing some sort of financial record which would show spending and income and those sorts of things. So I think those are the five key points we wanted to raise. You know, as I said, we've aligned ourselves with the My Vote Count submission, which has made an additional five. But these are the key ones we want to emphasize. And of course, a number of our submissions to the National Assembly are also still, I think they were included in the document pack, which give maybe some more detail for those as well. Chair, that was quick and easy from me, my 5 points. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hunter. Any clarity-seeking questions, honorable members? From that, Honorable Munakedi, Honorable Mutlashupi. In that order. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. No, I just want to understand as to what would be the rationale for wanting to go back into history and demand in terms of the law that political parties must disclose whatever funding they have received in the past. I just want to understand what would be the rationale. But whether as well such a law will stand the test of legal scrutiny, because effectively you'll be saying the law will have to apply retrospectively. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Munakedi. Honorable Mutlashupi.
Chair, usually I don't ask questions, I make comments just in passing. Mm-hmm. Members of society and communities by nature form companies, and companies are subjected to the Companies Act, and companies that are established do business with whoever, and therefore, Chairperson, it would not be a sin for members of society to donate whatever they would want to give to a political party. In terms of the submission here is that companies who do business with government should not be donating monies to political parties. I find it very strange because companies are made by individuals. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Mutlashupi. It looks like it was only one issue raised. The other one, it was a comment from Honorable Mutlashupi. So can you please respond to the issue raised by Honorable Munakedi? Thank you.
Chair, you must guide me. Is it possible to make a comment in response to a comment? Because I think that the member's raising a very important question that was not in the form of a question, it was in the form of a comment. But I think it is useful to clarify the purpose of the proposal to ban donations from companies doing business with the state. The question that needs to be answered by the committee is how can we address the risk of corruption when you have a donor to a political party that is also in business with the state that is run by that political party. Now, our proposal is that you can simply remove the possibility of that relationship existing. You can be a donor, or you can do business with the state, but you can't be doing both because of the risk of corruption it creates. There may be other solutions to that problem, and I would be interested to hear what they would be, but for us, it's a pretty clear fix for a pretty clear problem. And there is a history of incidents of corruption that have resulted from that, and we can discuss them if needs be. But I think the question that was asked about the rationale for historical disclosure, I should clarify that we're not asking that the legislation would require, would be retrospective. This is actually really a plea to the parties and to the committee to find some way, some mechanism of creating that historical record. And this could be an undertaking between parties. It could be a disclosure to the IEC. It could be a commitment that if a promotion of access to information request were made, that that request would be honored rather than dragging it through a court process. We're not asking for the legislation to create that requirement, but the rationale would be several of them. One is simply that it is important to complete the historical record, that there's a big piece of our politics over the course of a 20-year period of democracy that has actually essentially been shrouded in secrecy, that has only come out through particular incidents of investigative journalism and scandal. But actually, there's a much bigger story to be told about our democracy, about the lives of political parties over the last 20 years, which cannot currently be told because of this historical secrecy. So that is the first, is the historical record. The second is that there has been a concern raised by several political parties that this regulation, whether it is has good intentions or bad intentions, is potentially going to have unintended effects on multi-party democracy. For example, that small parties, I think the concern that was raised by the gentleman to my right, that small parties might suffer as a result of the regulation rather than be strengthened by the regulation. As it currently stands, we would have no way of knowing whether the regulation has its intended consequences or unintended consequences until we know, did donations go up or donations go down, or did income and spending stay the same? And that's why that information could also be of great use to Parliament and to the committee as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Lavoskasny, I think you'll be the last one. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I actually ask this question now to this organization, but it's actually a question that was formulating in my mind in the past three presentations. We all agree that the putting this bill together is the right step in the right direction on a zero tolerance to corruption, especially with the perception in this country that we are very corrupt, that there are corrupt governments and corrupt individuals, because it goes to all that levels. Now, whether it goes into disclosure or non-disclosure, say for instance, we accept that everybody has to disclose in this bill on private funding to political parties. I'm not so sure, and I think this is one of the unintended consequences, that that will prohibit the so-called corruption that we are aware of in state-owned companies, in tenders, in whatever, because people, organizations can disclose. The problem is we don't have, through this bill, the ability to monitor and disclose whatever is going on in other business processes in this country. So I can make a declaration to a political party to the upper threshold, and everything is clean as whatever, and no one can point a finger at me. But in the meantime, this bill and this process for political funding will not be the vehicle for us to discover if the same company or the same person is involved in other processes in government or whatever the situation may be, in a private deal of money under the table and that kind of thing. So my question,
Honourable Lavoskasny, can you just pause? Let's give Honourable Dlamini. Is it a point of order, Honourable Member? Okay.
Chairperson, we are deep in discussions now. In fact, it started with the company itself when they were he was responding. It was more discussion than responses. not she's out of order of what she's saying. I would suggest that we discuss these matters at the committee level where we debate everything. She's making input, valuable input, but maybe let's reserve that for the committee.
Can I make a ruling before there's going to be a proposal on top of another proposal, which will trigger another response? We take note of the input raised by Honorable Dlamini, suggestion that some of the issues necessarily will not be able to resolve them here. We'll deal with them. I think it's a point we made even earlier on at the level of the committee ourselves. But let's allow, because it was not a point of order which was raised, let's allow Honorable Lanskartney to continue, make your proposal, and then we take it from there. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to remind Honourable Dlamini that there's constant comments from this bank. Yeah, no, don't be disruptive, please. Respect the process. Thank you, Chair. In giving this my understanding of this, my question is, would you, as the Right to Know and other organizations fighting for the zero tolerance of corruption in this country, not only according to this bill, because we will, as the chairperson said, look at the recommendations and take that into consideration, also keep continuing fighting in the same way that we're fighting for this bill, for limiting corruption in other state departments? Because as it is not always, not even with the Auditor General's report and with all these things, to pick up these things. So the unintended consequences is we're going to a possibility of lessen the money for political parties to fulfill that role in society that we have to fulfill to have a government, and not sure that we will stop the corruption by this process. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it was important for you to conclude. I did not want to rush you, Honorable Lobaskarni, but I could see that many people were starting to get irritated. But the only thing I'm asking, can we be tolerant to each other's views, please?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying I had to allow Honorable Lavskarni to make a proposal, make a comment, but also try to protect in the process. And I think it applies to all of us, Honorable Members. Thank you, Honorable Lavskarni. Can we now give over to Mr. Hunter to respond, and then we move on? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To the Honourable Member's point.
Honourable Members, Honourable Members, can I please ask for tolerance amongst Honourable Members? Because I know some of the views will not necessarily sit very well with all of us. So let us be tolerant. Mr. Hunter, can I just give to the last member, then when you respond to all the issues. Over to you, Ntatisha Bango.
Chairperson, before we can proceed, I think you must run this meeting professionally and treat people equally. Because you can see what is happening now. He's talking, I'm on the floor, you're saying nothing.
You are protected.
I'm not protected because you're quiet. KT is speaking, they're making noise. When they start fighting, it's then that you get in. So, Chairperson, you must treat us equally. And if you don't know that, people are watching what you're doing. You must not favor those that are in your party and treat others as if they're not members. Thank you.
Honorable Shabangu, I'll just take that as a general statement because I'm not looking at members on the basis of political parties they come from. Myself, and for your own information, myself, Honorable Dlamini, who are from the same party. She raised a point of order while Honorable Lavskarni was still on the floor. I did not rule in her favor because we are from the same party.
Be
I mentioned, I indicated that it's not a point of order, it's not sustained, and then the Honourable Member Lewis Kagni is protected. I think I'm fair.
Chair, you are not aware. At the end of the day, both Honourable Mutlashupi and Honourable Lamin, they were exchanging words with Kate.
No, Honourable Shabangu, can I just request that we proceed? I will take you the issue that you are raising, yeah, as part of the, progress making proposals. So let's proceed in the interest of time. I don't think we're going to make actually progress if we can start to engage each other on the basis of political parties we come from and all of that. Let's allow Mr. Hunter to respond and then we move to the next presentation. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. The point, the concern that's raised by the Honourable Member is obviously a serious one. I think none of us can be so naive as to believe that simply by implementing this bill we're going to deal with the illness of corruption in our country. And I want to absolutely say, yes, organizations like the Right to Know, like many of the others you've heard from, are steadfast in the fight against corruption, irrespective of what happens with this bill. So we're not pretending this is a total solution to the issue of corruption, but nor can we pretend that the issue of transparency is only about corruption. It's actually partly about corruption, it's actually about political equality, about ensuring that people with major checkbooks don't get to hide behind a veil of secrecy and pull the strings in our democratic politics without people whose only currency is a single X on a ballot. That's actually where we need to put power in people's hands. So if the concern is that we have a political climate in which there isn't freedom of association, in which people can't associate with the political party of their views openly, then we need to address the climate of intolerance. Then we need to address the issue that we don't have a climate of freedom of association. I don't think that we can address the cause of that illness with secrecy, which is actually about addressing a symptom. For us, I think that this is a much overdue step in the maturing of South African democracy to ensure that there is a level of transparency, to ensure voters do have the right to know. And there are going to be consequences, but we must address those consequences in a way that strengthens democracy. I don't think we're at a point where we can any longer hide behind the veil of secrecy and say, as a democracy, we're not mature enough for that, for transparency. In this era, I think we need to say this is a South African democracy that is mature enough to deal with these difficult truths, and we can do so transparently. So, yes, there will still be corruption once this bill is passed. Yes, we will still have to lean much more heavily on law enforcement agencies to prosecute that corruption in a way that they have failed to do so in many instances in the past. But it is unfortunately not acceptable for us to hide behind secrecy any further. So this is why we're putting our support behind the bill, if those changes that we've proposed are implemented. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Let's take this opportunity to thank you for coming through, Mr. Hunter, to come and present before the committee. It's really appreciated. You are now released, sir. Thank you. Honourable members, our next presentation will be done by Corruption Watch. I think there are two presenters, Ms. Lieni Govansami and then Ms. Michelle Setole. Over to you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. Thank you for providing us with this opportunity to make our submissions on the bill. I'm here with my colleague, Michelle Setole. We are both from the Legal and Investigations team at Corruption Watch. The stated nature and purpose of the organization is in our submissions, but we're an NGO established in 2012 focused on anti-corruption work, particularly around policy. Our unit works on and litigation. We are also the Transparency International chapter in South Africa. And we hear today to highlight some aspects of our submission, but not all of them. We are really concerned, like I think other organizations have similarly expressed, about the risks that lack of transparency holds in respect of party funding. There are a number of issues that arise from companies, juristic entities, being able to fund political parties in a non-transparent manner, being able to influence particularly governing parties, whether on a national or provincial level, in the award of tenders, as well as in respect of policy choices that are being made by those governing parties. And our submissions reflect particularly those kinds of issues. We want to say that we regard the progress on the bill so far as being quite incredible, and we applaud the work that the ad hoc committee in the National Assembly and here is doing. We think, and I think we must state this at the outset, that a number of the issues that we raise today and that have been raised by other organizations relate to clarity and specifications around particular clauses. And so we don't necessarily think that these submissions should result in an amendment to the bill itself, but it could also be dealt with in regulation. So we support that this bill be passed as quickly as possible, so as to enable the implementation, enforcement of particularly the disclosure provisions, and that some of the issues that we raise be dealt with in regulation. I think that it could be a way of ensuring that this process is fast-tracked. So on to the provisions themselves. I think we'll start off by looking at the definition of donations in kind. We think that this needs to be better regulated to avoid any kind of abuse, particularly around the nature and type of donations in kind that are being made. Perhaps looking at where donations in kind are pro bono legal services or accounting services, and where possible, if those donations in kind can have some sort of monetary value attached to it. So even if they are provided for free, where there's a monetary value that can be estimated, we think that that could be a way of preventing some sort of abuse there, or preventing or allowing people, the public CSOs, to see what companies have donated and whether that has resulted in any influence of any kind, to the extent that that's possible. In terms of the prohibition on certain donations, look, we welcome the prohibitions. We think that they are necessary. In our previous round of submissions, on which we based our submissions on the OECD framework on financing democracy, these prohibitions were particularly recommended, and we're glad to see them here. We would want to still highlight the issues around donations to political parties from companies here, so local companies, trusts, individuals, investment vehicles, so companies would, or juristic entities would include investment vehicles that are either owned or partially owned by political parties. We think that there's still significant scope for abuse in respect of these companies, like we mentioned earlier, donating amounts of money in order to influence either tender outcomes or influence policy choices. What's important to note here is that what this is about, it's about knowing who owns those companies. So it's about beneficial ownership information or shareholding information. If we are not in a position to know, so even if a company discloses that they've made a particular donation, or if you're not privy to that information, you're still going to need the beneficial ownership information in order to properly check that and properly check who's behind those companies. I think trust could be similarly abused in that way. So it's important if we are if we are enabling the public, the media, civil society to interrogate information, to give them all the necessary information to do that. So where possible, we would like regulations to provide some specificity, to provide more clarity on the type of information that is being provided. On the issue of donations from foreign entities, and this is for training and skills development, policy development, we had seen this as a bit of an odd provision, but again, you know, perhaps it is about clarity. We think that donations of this nature is something that you would have wanted to prevent in terms of foreign entities affecting, influencing our policies or a governing party's policy. And perhaps this needs to be specified or clarified through the regulation. And this is really in order to prevent what the OECD guidelines says is policy capture, so where you have foreign entities, governments, trying to capture the policy of another nation. Then when we're looking at Clause 9.3, which deals about the disclosures or the Commission publishing disclosures on a quarterly basis, it's a bit unclear as to where that publication is taking place. Is it a publication that is by the Commission to Parliament, and does it stop there? Is this a publication that is public in the sense that it's placed on a website for public consumption? We think that this needs to be clarified. And if it is for public consumption, what is really important, and again drawing from the OECD framework, is that the publication of these reports should be timely, reliable, accessible, intelligible, and really there in order to promote media, civil society oversight and scrutiny. And finally, one of the final points is around supporting what National Treasury has said in their submissions around the funds appropriated for political parties by provincial legislatures. We understand National Treasury to be saying that those amounts that are appropriated by provincial legislatures often exceed the amounts that are transferred in the national sphere, and that public funding of political parties at a provincial level, at even a provincial level, should be regulated in terms of the current bill or the regulations to the bill. So we would support that view. So I think that we really, you know, did want to keep our submissions quite short as they are in the written submissions and are further elaborated on in the submissions we made before the National Assembly, which are available to you. At the end of the day, I think we really do need to emphasize that we would want the bill passed as quickly as possible in order to enable, at the very least, the provisions around disclosure to come into place. We understand the difficulties that the IEC is facing in terms of funding, but I don't think, or we don't think as Corruption Watch, that those difficulties would be faced around the disclosure provisions, because they would not take a lot in order to ensure that the information that is provided to the IEC is published on certain platforms. And we think that where possible, the issues that have been raised by organizations should be dealt with in terms of the regulation, which can be further debated from if there are changes. Thank you. Michelle and I will field questions.
Oh, thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, there's the presentation that's engaged. Any clarity-seeking question from the presentation itself? I'm not inviting any political statements this time around, honorable members. I'm going to be very strict. Only clarity-seeking questions. If you've got a political comment or statement to make, can you please reserve that airtime for next week when we'll be meeting as a committee for deliberations? Then you can put through or forward your party position and all of that. Honorable Damien, is your hand up or are you fine? Oh, okay. Now let me give you space to pray. Thank you. It looks like the presentation was straightforward, and the honorable members, understood it very clearly. So there's no questions for clarity. So you are excused. Thanks for the presentation. And then the last presentation, honorable members, will be from the Economic Freedom Fighters, which will be done by Mr. Kwena Manamela. That's the EFF. You can come forward, my brother. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Manamela.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Good afternoon. My name is Kwena Manamela. I am the National Head of Legal for the Economic Freedom Fighters. And these are our submissions. I will try to be very brief. I know that a bundle has just been circulated, and as you can see, it's very brief. At the outset, I would like to begin by stating and making it very clear that the EFF has at all material times been at the forefront of championing for a law that will regulate political party funding. To that end, I would like to refer the House or remind the House of a statement that was published by our national spokesperson, Mr. Quinton Mbuyisenindlozi, or rather Dr. Quinton Mbuyisenindlozi, when he stated that the EFF is the first political party to openly campaign that a law must be passed forcing political parties to reveal who their funders are. As the bill stands right now, the Economic Freedom Fighters is opposed to supporting it. This is as the bill stands. Now, our grounds for opposing the bill is twofold, or it's based on two grounds. It is, number one, Section 10 of the bill as it is. Number two, it will be Schedule 2, Regulations 2, Regulation 3, and Regulation 4 of the bill. Chairperson, if I may, just briefly and quickly. Section 10.1 reads as follows. No person or entity may deliver a donation to a member of the political party other than for political purposes. Subsection 2, a member of the political party may only receive a donation contemplated in subsection 1 on behalf of the party. Subsection 3 of Section 10, no person may circumvent subsections 1 and 2. And then we move over back to Section 1 of the bill, Chairperson. It defines a donation, and under paragraph A of donation, it says donation includes a donation in kind. And then when defining a donation in kind under paragraph A, subparagraph 1, 2, 3, and 4, it says money lent to a political party, any money paid on behalf of a political party, and so on and so forth. Chairperson, Section 10 is too broad. It's just too broad, and we cannot support it as it stands. When you read the bill, it states that no person or entity may deliver a donation. That's very broad. What in essence it does, it borderline infringes upon the right to freedom of association as entrenched in the Constitution. It is subject to gross misinterpretation as it stands, in the sense that it will also deter members of the public from joining political parties out of fear of losing out on their donations. It is prohibitory in nature. And the way it stands, for an example, Chairperson, Kwena Manamela, in his capacity as a beneficiary of a deceased estate, receives a donation from that particular deceased estate, or is bequeathed a donation in terms of a will. The reading of Section 10 then says that, that cannot happen. The reading of Section 10 then says that you cannot receive that donation unless that donation is for political purposes. Now, if I am sitting at home as a voter, and I suddenly hear about this bill and then, wait a minute, I receive a donation, it must be for political purposes. Well, let me rather not affiliate myself with any political party. Chairperson, I'll refer you to a Constitutional Court judgment, which essentially pronounces upon Section 36 of the Constitution. Section 36, one of the Constitution reads as follows. I'll just be brief. The right of the Bill of Rights may be limited only in terms of a law of general application to the extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable. And then it states that the relevant factors for determining reasonable and justifiable limitation of a particular right would include the nature of the right, the importance and purpose of the limitation, the nature and extent of the limitation, and the relation between the limitation itself and the right. We should not be seen to pass a law that will limit the rights of people to exchange relations with one another, unless if it's only for political purposes. And that's how Section 10 currently reads. We as the EFF then submit that the wording of Section 10 should at least be amended to read as follows, to say that no person or entity may deliver a donation intended to a political party to a member of that political party other than for political purposes. And then we also submit that we need to elaborate further on the definitions of a donation, because they're also too broad and subject to misinterpretation. That those are our submissions insofar as Section 10 is concerned. Insofar as Regulations 2 and 3 and 4 are concerned, Chairperson, we submit that the proportional allocation formula is totally prejudicial to small parties, in the sense that if the spirit and purpose of the bill is to ensure multi-party democracy, why then should we have such an imbalanced allocation of these particular funds? Chairperson, we submit that it should be an equal allocation, 50-50, Chairperson. Those are the brief submissions of the economic freedom fighters, and we will take questions and so forth as that is concerned.
No, thank you very much, Dr. Manamela, for the presentation. I will invite hands for members if there's any clarity seeking. There's the proposal from the EFF, 50-50 split and no proportionality and so forth. So I'll invite, and I've got Honorable Munakedi, Honorable Dlamini, Honorable Chabangu, and then Honorable... Okay, let's move in this order, Honorable Members. Honorable Munakedi, Honorable Dlamini, Honorable Mutlashuping. In that order, Honorable Members.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think obviously some of the issues need to be ventilated in our own committee, not at this level where we are receiving presentations from interested stakeholders, including the EFF, obviously as a political party. But with regard to his their submission, their proposal around, I think, Section 10, I just want to get the understanding clearly, because my understanding, my own understanding, is that this bill is based on the Constitution, on what is there in the Constitution, as we quoted or referred to it in the old section or clause 236 of the Constitution, which refers to represented political parties in the legislature and parliament or national legislature. And as you are aware, the electoral arrangement clause in South Africa is that when we vote for political parties, not individuals. So that is why in the bill it can be allowed that an individual should actually get a donation, unless that individual will be receiving the donation on behalf of a party. Until such time that we amend those laws whereby we will done have constituency-based elections. There's no way we can then provide for such in the bill, no? That individual can. If an individual wants to receive a donation, it must be on behalf of the party, and it means he must be part as a supporter or as a member of a party. So I just want you to rethink, you know, I think what we have just presented as far as special discourse is concerned. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Tlamini.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chair, let me welcome the presentation. Just one question. Chair, you roll me out of order if I'm out of order. But it's a genuine question that I hear the inputs made by the party, which one will take them as serious as inputs made by other organizations. But how is this objection different from all the objections they are making in everything that is done? Just that question. How is it different, this objection? Is it a genuine objection, or is it an objection because a bill is initiated by the ANC? I would want to take this thing serious, but see, my challenge is that they've been objecting everything. How is this one different? So that when I apply my mind, taking what he has been presenting, I know that this one is genuine.
Thank you, Honorable Mutashupin.
I'm covered by the interpretation that was brought by Honorable Monakedi on Section 10 of the interpretation of Section 10.
Oh, thank you. Those are the issues in the Demon American. Please respond.
All right, then.
I think it's two issues. The other one, please take it as a comment. But if you want to clarify or respond to it, just respond.
All right, then. Thank you, Chairperson. The first issue, Honorable Member, if you go to Section 10, particularly Clause 2, right, I'm going to read it to you as it is. A member of a political party may only receive a donation contemplated in Subsection 1 on behalf of the party. A 78-year-old member of a political party may only receive a donation if it's intended for political purposes. It cannot be. What I'm saying, that's why I'm saying it's too broad. I understand the fact that it was not the intention of the legislature to make it so broad. It might be oversight, might have been an error, but the way you read it, an ordinary member of the public or any other entity leader will read this to say that I, in my personal capacity, cannot receive a donation unless if this particular donation will be utilized for the realization of political party objectives. This is how Section 10 reads. I am not speculating, it's how it reads. It says that. So our submission is to say that let us be specific. Let us not be too broad in just saying a donation received by a political member. Am I clear enough? Thank you. Okay, thank you, thank you. And the second comment, it's a genuine objection, madam. It's a genuine objection in the sense that should this bill be passed as it is, we intend to refer it to court to be declared unconstitutional. That's how genuine this objection is. Should this bill be passed with Section 10 reading as it reads, the economic freedom fighters will take this to court to be declared unconstitutional. That is how genuine this objection is, like all other objections. We do not just object for the sake of objecting. Thank you.
No, the last part, the last part of your, I mean, your response, I don't want to take it as a threat.
It is definitely not.
Yeah, I would like to take it as part of your the issue.
It's actually part of the presentation.
You are actually clarifying.
Yes.
The committee. Yes.
How about you?
Yeah. But it's fine. I think we take note of the issues that you are putting forward. I mean, the party position, where do you stand, where are your discomfort, which areas were actually objecting to the bill and so forth. I think we take note of that. I will just give the last round to honorable members, and then we conclude on it. Honorable Nita.
Thanks, Chair. I want to reiterate that the bill that we are dealing with here and now, it's a bill that is focused on political funding. So I do not want us to confuse this bill with other legislation, as if we are regulating individuals. Let me put it in that sense. We are more focused on political funding. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ndate Munakedi, it looks like
I'm confident that the chairperson of EFF, Ndate Mpofu, will advise them correctly.
Good okay. Point, yeah. No, thank you. Do you want to respond, or are you comfortable, or you want to say something before we conclude?
So far, nothing warrants a response.
Okay. Yes. No, thank you very much. Ndate Manamela, thanks for the presentation from the EFF. We really appreciate you coming through to make those proposals and then putting forward your party position. It's really appreciated. You are actually excused, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Honorable members, that was the last presentation from the EFF. So that was actually the last presentation from the EFF. But before we conclude, honorable members, I think I just need to mention one or two issues, brief issues. We are scheduled to meet as a committee next week, Wednesday, based on our program of the NCOP. Now, next week, Wednesday, has been allocated now to the ad hoc on the Northwest intervention, and it's going to take place the whole day, so which is going to have an impact on our work as a committee, because it means there's going to be a clash between the two ad hoc committees. Now, I actually wanted to put forward a proposal that says we must actually try to shift our meeting for Tuesday. And then because Tuesday also there's a sitting on the celebration of the legacy of Mandela and Sisulu, there will be a debate in the NCOP, even until 5 or 6. So I was going to propose to the committee that maybe we must look at meeting it in the evening, because we don't have time. Maybe Tuesday evening, 6 o'clock. Until 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, if that would be fine with honorable members. If honorable members feels no, there's going to be a problem, we go in terms of the program, like the committee secretary now was communicating with the office of the House Chairperson, Nyambi, of committees, to request that change to accommodate us for next week. Therefore, if we're not going to agree on it, it means we're going to have a problem for next week. And then if we don't meet on Wednesday, the implication is that it's going to have an impact on our 6 weeks program, which we set ourselves for as a committee. If we miss the meeting next week, Wednesday, we don't meet all of next week, it means we'll only be able to convene after recess, so which will be a problem. So I want us to agree on it. So I'll invite honorable members to make comments, proposals, and then let's see if we are not able to meet each other on that one. The proposal that is workable, we looked at it either Wednesday evening after the ad hoc of Northwest, Wednesday evening 6 o'clock, or either Tuesday evening 6 o'clock, but it must be in the evening. There's no way in the program where we are going to be accommodated for the whole of next week. So I'm putting it to you, honorable members. Okay, let's have an opportunity for all members in that order to maybe express a view. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, when we started the process, we committed ourselves as members of the committee that we would be flexible in terms of time, dates and time scheduled for our meetings. So I am reiterating that point,
that we agree with the proposal as of now. If there are any hiccups that the chair picks up, you will then communicate to us, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Munakiri. Honorable, I want you to say something, Honorable. I'm insisting that you must say something. Over to you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Given the schedule of the NCOP, and also taking note that this is not the only committee, committees are still sitting, I will support the Tuesday evening.
Thank you. Honorable Mutashupi.
I second the proposal that we have made from the chair, and it is on the basis that the majority of the members who serve also on this committee are also members in the intervention. So looking at that, the practicality is that we have requested that we will, as Honorable Mwita said, will be flexible enough, and I think the majority of the people agrees that the meeting of Tuesday must continue.
No, thank you. Honorable Lavuskahdi, and then Honorable Chabangu will be the last one.
Thank you, Chair. I am aware of the fact that we made a commitment for the program as being proposed on the as is for Wednesday. I understand that we have a problem with that. Unfortunately, at this stage, I cannot meet on Tuesday evening because I do have other commitments as well, and if I have a meeting that I can't postpone. So I would support the meeting on Wednesday, and I know it's going to be hard on some of the members here. Other than that, I would like to just remind the members that we can ask for an extension. This is a rule, and select committees all over, right through this 4 years, asked for extensions for the period of 6 weeks. So there's no reason that if we can't find the time to do quality work, and not in the end of the day when we are tired and we're going to be rushed through everything, and we are going to say you to talk too long because we want to get home and there's no buses and all that kind of thing. Because I've been in meetings like that. It's a rushed job. Then I would rather ask that we postpone to the first week after we come back from the constituency
town. Honorable Chabangu, you are the last one.
Chair, I think we must follow a policy of majority rule. This, I'll call him a woman. She's disturbing me. I think we must follow a policy of majority rule, taking into account that after next week, there is a committee that is going to go all over South Africa telling people about the expropriation of land without compensation. And I'm serving in that committee, and Dr. Mutashuping is also a member. And then we'll never have any other time. Thank you.
No, thank you, honorable members. I think it goes without saying. I didn't want to put it like Honorable Chabangu is putting it. I wanted to put it in a more lighter pronouncement and say, in as much as we can see that many people agree, the majority, but our responsibility is to reach out to most of the members and to show them that this is not possible, let's do it in this fashion. But sometimes, again, it's also not possible. And then honorable members, so we are actually agreeing on the meeting of Tuesday evening. So we'll make that request to the House Chairperson, and then for 6 o'clock in the evening of Tuesday. So let me thank everybody that came through to make, oral presentations to the committee, members of the media, members of the community, and then the critical stakeholders that set aside time to come today, and then also including ourselves, honourable members. It shows commitment from our parties, members of parliament, that we are dedicated to do the work. We are always not rushing. We want to do quality work and so forth. So on that note, honourable members, thank you very much for coming through. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.